Hi, this is Josephine Shokrian, and I'm with Ifateo Cobbins at WGXC in Hudson, New York. Ifateo, do you mind introducing yourself?
Hello, everyone. My name is Ifateo Cobbins, as you just said, and I'm sitting here chilling with the interviewer at WGXC, and we're just chatting. We'll soon be chatting, and hopefully you'll like what I have to say, and you'll listen. That's it. Sorry.
Thank you. So why don't we start with you telling me a little bit about your background?
My background, I lived in Hudson for most of my life. I was born in Mount Vernon, New York, 42079. My mom came up here, met my dad, and have two brothers. One's 30 and one's 29, I think. Yeah, 30 and 29. And I went to Hudson High School. I went to elementary school in Hudson, John L. Edwards, Hudson High, middle school, all that. And I went to college in 2001 at Columbia Green. And I worked off and on, and been writing poetry for a very long time, ever since I was 11. And I just started like venturing out, like going to like different spots around town, pursuing my poetry, going to open mics and stuff. And basically that's about it. All in a nutshell for right now. That's it.
what brought your family to Hudson?
What brought my family to Hudson is I don't know, life brought my family to Hudson. You know how people get in problems or whatever, and it just didn't work out. And my mom, it was just me and my mom, and so she moved us back up here. And then she met my dad. His name is Paul Haynes. And they've been married for like 32 years. They're still together. And I have two brothers. Paul is 30, like I said before, and Justin is 29. Those are that's their names. And my mom's name is Janice Haynes. Yeah. But just struggles, and like people go through things and they say they're gonna leave, they leave, and they just start a new life somewhere else. So that's how I ended up here. And I'm not mad, I'm happy. It's cool. So, but other than that, it's been a long road and stuff. Everybody has struggles, like I said before, and I just go with the flow and working hard to do what I want to do and keep a positive reputation. You know, I don't want to have myself out there being like some person that doesn't care about themselves or has no ambition to do nothing in life, just existing, you know, standing on street corners and drinking and smoking. That's just a dead end life for me, I think. So I just keep on striving to move on towards better things. That's all.
What, could you tell me a little bit about how you grew up and what part of Hudson you grew up in?
Okay, I grew up in, I grew up all around Hudson because we lived a few different places. I was raised on Warren Street, Allen Street, well, mainly Warren Street and Allen Street, actually. And we used to live down by, have an apartment down there by the railroad station, by the Half Moon, which is an old-time bar they used to have down there. But most of my memories are from Allen Street. That was the street that I grew up on from my teenage years until, like, it's like some of my child years and up into my adult years. And that's where I met all my friends and We used to just sit outside, hang out, and play games, and I know it's just not like it's today, like how you have kids, they don't play anymore. They're always on computers and stuff, and on their iPads and phones. They're stuck in a virtual world, you know. But us, we used to go nature walks, play on the block, play in the woods, tree houses. I remember we had a 3-story tree house up in the woods, and we put vines, like they had some apple smelling leaves in the woods, and we hung them around the clubhouse and whatever, so we'd get some fresh scents or whatever. It was kind of fun. We were kids then, but I had a really good childhood though, and a really good teenage life, and I'm still having a pretty good adult life. But when I was a teenager, I got sick. I was sick for years at a time, on and off and stuff. But I'm doing a lot better now, so I'm thankful for that. So. In some ways, I'm kind of making up for lost time, because when I was sick, I missed out on a lot. So, but a lot of like the fun things like kids, teenagers do, like go to their high school prom, or hanging out with their friends and stuff, or going to different like parties and stuff. I had to stay home and recuperate, or I was either in the hospital from age 11. So like probably like 21 when I finally just ended, and now I'm okay.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I don't know. I never talked about it, and like out in the open like this. And I'm thinking I shouldn't talk about it, but then I'm thinking like, why not? Because I mean, everybody has something wrong with them, right? Well, I have Crohn's disease, and it's a digestive disorder, and I came from hell and back. Well, I almost died, like twice, which is it's kind of a scary feeling, and but I'm here as you can see, and it was just crazy. First I would feel better, and then something else would happen, and it was just totally crazy. I can't really talk about it at this moment. I'm sorry. it's, oh God. I don't know, like, I remember me and my mom was going to church. We was going to go to church one day. It was one evening, and, all of a sudden, I just started shaking violently like I was cold and shivering. And but I wasn't cold. It was really warm outside. And I said, I don't feel cold, but I'm shivering like I'm cold in the inside or whatever. And then my dad took my temperature, and it was like way over like 100 or something. And then they immediately rushed me to the emergency room. And I'm like 11, 12 years old. I'm remembering the best that I can. I remember I went to the emergency room. I remember Dr. Perlstein, he was my surgeon at the time. And he had pressed on my stomach, and I really screamed really loud. Like, he said that we have something's wrong in her abdomen area, and we have to do emergency exploratory surgery. And I wasn't under for like, I don't know how long, hours, I could imagine. And then I woke up feeling kind of, I was feeling better, because I think I was relieved that something was actually done, you know? And but then I was good for about a couple months, and then something else happened. I had to go under the knife again. And they had took some of my colon out, and the appendix taken out, and there were some other things got taken out, but I don't remember. But it was just like something that you don't never want to go through. Nobody, but people do go through things, that they can't control. Because if I would have just sat there and not said anything, or nothing ever happened, I would have been dead. I would have died. Wouldn't be here talking to you right now. But I am. And a lot of things back then, I was very quiet. I really didn't say anything. I was just to myself, like a loner. Even in school, I was just to myself, basically. And I remember my mom would always used to get mad at me because I would never speak up and stuff, tell her what was going on and whatnot. And then that's one day she gave me a book, like a note, a journal, and just started telling me to write down my thoughts. Just write whatever you feel and whatnot. And that's what I started doing. And that's the day I think I became a poet. Yeah. But it worked out. I'm not ashamed. I don't regret anything that happened to me, because I believe that if I didn't go through it, or life didn't give me the curse of a blessing, I would not be the person I am today, you know? I wouldn't have found like hidden talents that I had before, you know? I would still be in an eggshell, a shell, just locked up in my own mind. But I'm not anymore, so. That's all. Sorry.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that with
me. Yeah, thank you. That's the first, wow. I felt a relief. Yeah, wow. Oh, you don't say anything, but.
So I take it you're feeling better right now.
Yeah. Yes, I am.
That's really great.
Thank you.
Just to go back, how did that affect your relationship with different friends in the neighborhood?
I was very quiet. As far as my friends, because I was scared. What are they going to think of me? Or are they going to think I'm a freak or something? Are they want to hang around, you know? Kids are cruel, you know, at that age, so you got a whole bunch of things going through your head. I remember I used to hang around my so-called friends, I used to be quiet, I used to stay distant, kind of like, but just still be in the picture and whatever. And then one day I was like, I don't know, just something happened, I guess, just by coincidence. You know how when you go to the, when you, You know how, when I was talking to my mom on the phone or whatever, right? And she was, no, I was talking to the nurse. I went in the nurse's office, and I was just talking to the nurse because the nurse knew about my situation. And all of a sudden, my friend just come in just to see what I was doing, and she heard the conversation. And I was like, oh my goodness. And I was like, I really didn't feel like explaining again about what happened. And then I told her, and that was it. They didn't treat me any differently. I kind of felt, even though I told them and they said it was okay, in my mind I was thinking, I'm like, I don't think they really appreciate me. They're just saying that just so they won't hurt my feelings, you know? And I was still kind of like shying away from them, you know? So, but eventually, as years go on, people grow up and they get used to you, and it really doesn't matter anymore. It's like, this is what you have. We still love you. We're still your peoples. And we're here for you. So you don't have to worry about that, having that, like, I feel like a freak type of complex, which I had kind of had like for a couple of years for a while though, but it worked out pretty well. But then you got them, excuse me, then you got those behinds, then you got those behinds that are just, what can I say, assholes? Bunch of assholes. And they tease you sometimes because they don't know. I don't know, they know through hearsay, you know? And then I used to get mad, and then I just walk away because they don't know, they're ignorant. and stuff, because I'm a grown woman now, so I don't have to stoop to their level, you know. So I know what it is, and they don't need to know nothing at all. It's only the people that know, that's all that matters. So everything else could be cast out the door. But I have a good group of friends. They're just three. I have three friends and a whole bunch of associates. But I still call those them my friends also, because they're still good people anyway. You know, everybody has their little moments, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to hear more about the communities that you grew up with around you.
The community, like talking about my friends or... Oh, I also was... I remember, yes. Since I was like a loner, whatever. My mom always had us like... I don't know, I guess when we was growing up, you know how parents just want to get rid of their kids sometimes, just tell them just to go out, just do something. My mom would always have us in like different organizations, like clubs and stuff. We was in the boys club. We was part of Kumba Dance and Drum for like many years. And I like probably like grew up in there. We grew up in there. So I remember I was a dancer, and my brothers, they played the drums. And I was there for like almost like 7 years. And then we was also part of Boys Club. We was part of, I had Library Club back then. We was into anything that we could possibly have to be constructive. My mom didn't want us hanging out on a street corner or nothing. She was like, y'all gonna do something, but y'all not gonna sit up under me or whatever. So we would go to the Boys Club, hang out with our friends, meet new friends, go to art workshops and stuff, go to the playground that they had back then. They used to have John L. Playground, and they used to have a playground down here in the summertime where the kids go and just hang out. It was supervised, you know. And right now, what else did I do? I don't know. I don't remember.
There's so much I want to ask you about.
One thing I like to answer. I like questions. I like people to ask me questions and I answer them, because when it comes like to like just me talking or whatever, I really want to know what to say. You feel me? And it's just like, okay, what's gonna happen next? I'm like, I don't know what to say. Am I rambling too long, or what's going on?
So, do you still have friendships from when you were younger today?
Yeah, I do have friendships when I was younger from today. But as things change, people change, just because I don't know they went to a different environment they came up in or whatever. They just decided they don't want to hang out no more. But we have that like that mutual respect. You know, like, hi, goodbye. We sometimes have small conversations, but we do keep in contact, but I'm not as close to them as I was when I was in school. And back then, I called them my friends in school, but they weren't my friends. Like, when you have friends in school, you hang with them outside of school also, and they invite you to their house, or you invite them to your house, whatever. As far as with me, that rarely did ever happen. I would hang out with them in school, and when I go home, I would be home by myself and hang out with my brothers and stuff. So I was mainly like a tomboy anyway. I was playing dirt and whatever. I didn't mind hanging out with my brothers. I'm the only girl out of five grandchildren. So, I mean, I was kind of used to it. So I'm like, I used to hang out with the boys. Whatever. Which I felt more comfortable. I don't know why, but I just did. But I do have my I have three main friends that are my best friend, and one of their names is Shannon Morrison, Maria Morrison, and Michelle Fox. And my main best friend, her name is Brandy Mann. But she's not around right now, but she'll be back soon. That's all I have to say about that. But those are my main friends. Oh, and Damar Watson. They're all my center, my circle that keep me grounded, you know. And we all have we have things in common. Like Michelle, she's a poet. She writes a very excellent writer, but she's just scared. She just hides it in her notebook, whatever. She doesn't want to pursue her dream, I guess. I don't know. But she's also a good artist also. And my Shannon, she just knows everything. I don't know how she knows. She's like the quote-unquote paper, newspaper. If you want to know anything, just go to Shannon. She'll tell you what's going on around the block. And Maria, she's a good friend. She's sweet, quiet to herself. And my other friend, Demar Watson, he's a DJ. He DJs and stuff. And we're putting something together where he makes the beats, and I add my poetry to it, so it'll be like a joint collaboration or whatever. We all have like different dreams. We have the similar dream, but we have like a lot in common too. So as far as like music, art, and whatever, so it works well. I'm not mad about what life gave me as far as my friends. It's all about the experience. I say if you never experience anything, if you never do anything, always experience. Take hold of the experience, because it doesn't matter whatever you go through. That experience is going to help you through life, because you may encounter something else that's similar to what you had before, you know. And then you're like, okay, I know what to do now, what I didn't do back then. You feel me? So then you just could. It's easier. So like I experienced that, I know not to do that again or what to expect the next time it comes around. Like you make mistakes and you grow up from them. So that's the way I put it.
Do you want to tell me a little bit about your writing?
Oh yeah, I'd love to tell you about my writing. I've been writing since I was 11. But I remember I was writing before that when I was in third grade. And I think I was like 9 years old. And I remember just started writing. We had this course on poetry. And I was like, okay, I don't know nothing about poetry. This is some type of Shakespeare stuff. I can't do this. So then I was like, okay. Then I was reading, it's like snaps of like brief moments. Like that's what I think poetry is. And like, it's like I don't know, it's just amazing. It's like, I don't know, can I share something with you?
Please, I would love that.
Huh?
Please, I would love that.
Okay. I don't know, it's like an outline of everything that's going on, but in like different imagery, imagination, you know, family. Like I wrote this one. Well, I never read this one. It's called "Nobody's Seen It But God," you know, because you know how the world. Everybody's saying they've seen things and they didn't see nothing, and originally everything. You have like a higher power or whatever you believe in. He sees all, you know. So I say nobody's seen it but God. Everyone assuming their own thought process. Naive, chosen neglect. Information engaging, false information added to the major truth. Wild staggers, drunken stallions, wearing made-up wannabe medallions. Crosses turning into X's, holding up hexes on heads, those who wear snakes as dreads. Made up feds, corruption capturing justice. Walking with a leash around its neck, stepping on fine lines, like tiptoeing through landmines. Creeping stalkers, ninja night walkers, cat-like prowls, empty secrets hidden in the tile. Nobody's seen it but God. That's, I never read it, but thank you for letting me perform it for you. I hope it sounds all right, but it's like, I'm basically talking about people think that they know everything, and they don't really know nothing at all. And they're just giving false information and lying, adding lies to the truth, you know, and then just mixing it up. Then you got all these people that are wearing, they think they're holier than thou, and they're turning their crosses and turning them to X's, you know, and like they're just like crossing you out, you feel me? And then I don't know, it's just crazy. And then I'm talking about like the political system also, where I said made up feds, because you got these corrupt people in an office, no matter what type of office they are, police office, government office, any type of office, they're made up and they're fake, and they're causing corruption against people, basically people like me, or people like anybody else, you know. And then like it's like they take you and they're like, it's like I got a hold of you, you know, and you can't go nowhere, only when if I tell you to go. So that's why I say you're walking like a dog, you're like a dog leading, and he's the authority is just like leading you. It's like a kind of like a slavery type of thing, you know? And then you trying to tiptoe out, trying to be careful, but every time you tiptoe, you're gonna stand on a landmine. It's gonna blow up in your face. And it's just crazy. Then you got all these perverts, like when I say creeping stalkers, ninja night walkers, cat-like prowl. They're creepy. They're quiet, and they don't want to be heard. They don't want to be seen. Walking around like a fake Mr. Clean, you know. And but in the walls, you know that saying where it says, if the walls could talk. That's why I said empty secrets hidden in the tile. If walls could talk, they would say a lot. And that's why I say nobody's seen it but God in the end, because nobody didn't see it but God, you feel me? Am I making any sense? All right, thank you. All right, I'm sorry if I lingered on too long with that.
I apologize, that was very powerful, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
You're a great writer.
Thank you.
Do you have any other poems you want to share?
Oh yeah, I have lots. I write every day, mm-hmm. basically, and I believe that if you wake up in the morning and you feel like you should do something, just do it, you know, because that means that it's meant to be, you know, and if you don't do it, you feel like a guilty feeling, because like why am I stopping myself from doing what I should be doing, you know, and not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, so. Sometimes I always carry a pen and a paper. Sometimes if I don't have paper, I write on a napkin, like just thoughts that just come that I need to write down. And then in the end of the day, I read them, I put them all together, and it becomes a poem about anything possible that makes some type of a sense and stuff. So. But yeah, I will read another one if you don't mind. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh goodness, I'm excited. Okay, this one is called Gone. Completely Shot. I don't have a lot, but I have enough to survive. I like to put myself on a mantle, so that I can treat myself like the precious object that I am. But I abandon myself and live life like I don't give a damn. Society is so stressed out on looks that the looks in the eyes of glamour can't even read a book. Fused are the screws of life you chose to use. Now you're thinking, you are the pearl of all the holes. Standing behind the gate, revealing the lie that you chose to make. Trying to make a shot and just leaving the ball on the floor, so tell me, what the hell are you playing for? Having nothing to gain something. Listening to a problem and talking around with no response, owning nonsense like it's the ruler of your life, living with the pain of a broken heart, never letting it go so you can mend, heal, and sew, but you wear it like it's an emblem on your chest, a false bulletproof vest, trying to wear for show and sympathy, building emotions of misery, adding plots to a cemetery, giving death a chance in your chaotic, psychopathetic look on intimacy. Feed your body right because you are your own enemy. That's it. Thank you.
That's really beautiful.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. I mean, this poem, I was thinking about a whole lot of things. But in the beginning, I was thinking about myself. And I wrote this like a couple of years ago. When I said I don't have a lot, but I have enough to survive. Which I don't have a lot, but I have enough to survive. Which a lot of people should like take that as a very important. Because, I mean, you don't need the whole world, you know, to live, you know. You just need basically food, water, shelter, love, and maybe a little bit of money in your pocket, and a job, you know. So that's just simple, and I'm fine with that. So, but there's these people that they have so much that they want to take everything. They want to keep it all to themselves, you know, and they don't want to help anybody else out, you know. They just keep it, and that's called just greedy nonsense to me, and like. You shouldn't, you're blessed with that, you know, and you should, I believe everybody should be blessed, they should bless the other people, the lesser than, the unfortunate, whatever you want to call it. So, but I'm proud of, I feel comfortable where I am, but I would like to move up, but I'm surviving, you feel me? So, I like to put myself on a mantle, that's what I said. I like to be up there with everybody, you know? And if I had, I would give, because that's what we're born to do. That's what humans all around the earth, God's creation, that's what we're supposed to help each other out. It shouldn't be like, I gotta wait for this. It shouldn't be like no fighting or arguing or who's gonna do this, where's the money gonna come from. It just should be natural, like you need help, I'm gonna help you. That's why we're here, but then I say I abandon myself, cause then I'm thinking like if I get all that, am I gonna abandon who I really am? Is that all gonna take over like the greed and stuff? Which is not, but I'm just saying this. But then when you look at society, they saw all the people that have everything, they're so stressed out on looks. That people like those famous people or these people who think that they're all that or whatever, they dress up in these fine, fancy clothes or whatever, they can't even read. And they're going around, walking around, talking a whole bunch of nonsense, which is nothing. And I'm like, you're trying to talk something to somebody else and you can't even read a book? I mean, I think it's stupid. I mean, you should be concerned more about the books than your glamour, you know? I mean, because glamour can get you ahead, you know? If you can't sign your name, if you don't know how to read, you know? I mean, a lot of people in this town can't read, really. I mean, it's kind of sad. And I think, I don't know, a lot of people say I'm wrong for thinking. I'm like, if you can't read, if you come to a certain age, if you come into a certain age and you don't know how to read, that's your fault. Because why do you want to walk around and not know how to read or write? I mean, you're old enough to, you're like 16, 17, 18 years old. You should have that ambition, like, to know what's going on. Like, I need to know how to read, so let me go or take a class or some initiative to practice or have somebody help me. But people are lazy, and they just use it as an excuse, well, I didn't have the facilities or whatever. I mean, that's no darn excuse. There's libraries here. Yeah, you got friends. I mean, they could read, you know. You got friends that read, you know. I mean, it's just crazy. And then, sorry. And then you have these people that, like those glamour people, they think they're the pros of all the hoes. Like, they got it like that. They could get any man they want, whatever, whatever, whatever. And they're just like standing there, not doing anything. They're thinking that they're that certain type of person, but they're not. They're just playing a whole freaking fantasy. They're painting a picture of a bunch of lies. Okay. I'm sorry. And then they're just hiding themselves, really, trying to be like the in crowd. You know, because you got these 16 and 17 year olds that are basically having babies around here. Their daddies are 16, 15, 14 years old. They don't know nothing about parenthood. Then you got the girls that drop out of school because they got to take care of the baby and stuff. Then you got their parents babysitting, basically ended up taking care of their grandchild while the children on the streets again. You know, I mean, it's just like an ongoing cycle, which is dumb. I mean, it's like, it's not dumb. It's dumb and it's ignorant. And then you got people who are from the outside that look in. They don't really know what's going on or whatever. Then they want to, I don't know, they want to, like, they want to take kids away. They want to put people in jail or whatever. They just want to do everything freaking to hurt the whole situation, even though it's hurt already, you know, but they hurt it more, you feel me, once they intervene, which I totally understand. But I mean, you gotta be human and you have to understand what they're going through also, you know, and stuff. But I don't know where I just totally went off left track, left off field, but I'm sorry. And then you got these other types of people who go through things and they just living with the pain of a broken heart, never letting it go so they can mend healing. So they're just living in that hell that they just want to be buried in. You know, they have no ambition to rise up. And whatever, they always want the pity to be on them. So that's why I was like, you wear an emblem on your chest, false bulletproof vest. I mean, that's not going to protect you, you know? I mean, you done messed up. You have to get up in order for you to progress, you know? There's people there out there to help you, but how are we supposed to know if we don't say anything, you know? And then they're just adding these thoughts, like they say, they're going to do this to people. They're so down that they're angry, and they want to do this to everybody, and that's why I say they're adding, building emotions of misery, adding plots to a cemetery. So they're adding you. They're ready to holler at you and probably not physically kill you, but I mean just like emotionally just hurt you or hate you, like they just curse you out or something like that. I'm just using a figure of speech, an example or whatever. And then giving death a chance in your chaotic, psychopathetic look on intimacy. That's what I'm talking about. Those perverts and those freaking nasty people who prey on little children and any type of a child, teenage, whatever. They have this thing that they just want to have holler at a baby or a kid, you know. I'm like, in reality, what are you getting out of that, you know? I mean, It's just totally stupid. Sometimes I think about what I, when I hear it on the news, like, why are you going to holler at a 7-week-year-old baby? There was on the news the other day. The baby was, her inside messed up, her vaginal area, and whatever. I'm serious. This was on the news. And then, what does a guy get off the, do you get aroused when you mess with children? That's just totally disgusting, you know? I mean, it's just totally sick, and that's why I say giving death a chance in your chaotic, psychopathetic look on intimacy. Why are you going to do that? I mean, even though that you're down, why are you going to go to a child or something that's innocent, pure, and mess with them, you know? And they're messed up for life. And then that brings a cycle of they're going to want to forget. So they're going to start drinking. They're going to go on drugs. And then they're going to start using their excuse that they've been through as a reason that it's okay for them to do that, which is not. And that's why I think, like, some people need, like, people, everybody needs to get together and just help one another out, not just leave everybody hanging on the corner, no matter what, because everybody needs help. Even those crazy, psychotic perverts need help, you know? But they're just thrown away to the trash, just like mostly everything else, but the people with finances. You feel me? That's all I have to say about that. But thank you. I'm so sorry.
Don't apologize at all. This is your time. All
right.
How do you... I'm going to rephrase this question. How do you experience, like, your day-to-day... What's your day-to-day life like here?
It's a lot of I wake up, I watch a little TV, and then when I go outside, I take walks around town here, and I watch a lot. I'm very like a visual writer of what I see, and things I absorb it in my mind, whatever. And I just think and I just look and I think I see changes of when I was younger, like around Hudson. I remember way back when it was a dump town or whatever. It was like really no stores or whatever. And there's really nothing to do. But my mom always had us in something, so. But as far as other people, there was really nothing to do, just hang out on the streets and drink or whatever. But as time passed, I saw the buildings change. They're being up to date. What do you call it? Renovated. There's more stores now. But there's more antique stores, which is okay, but it's not, I don't think it's okay. I mean, antiques are antiques. It's like a big old freaking flea market, a glorified flea market, you know, selling old things, whatever. But the only thing about this town I really don't like is, all the old food places that they used to have. I remember they used to have a place called Mama Rosa's here in town. A pizza place in town. It's called the Pizza Place. We sold it, like the best pizza in Hudson, I thought. And there was just like these old little like mom and pop's shops in here that was like more comforting and like it felt invited, you know, when you go in, walked in there. Now sometimes, like when I walk up the street now, I remember those things that I used to experience, but now when I walk in stores, all these antique stores and art galleries, it's like I don't feel comfortable. Seriously, I feel like I'm the black chick who's walking in an antique store where the owners who are white looking at me like I'm going to steal something. A lot of people don't know who I am, that I'm an artist myself. But it's just the fact that there's none of that closeness anymore. You feel me? This is my point of view. That's what I'm saying. That's what I like. I like art. I like antiques. I like history. And I feel like I'm free and I can walk wherever the heck I want to walk. Walk into and out wherever I want to. And it could just be for no reason. I'm like, your doors are open and it's for people to walk in. Not for you to hound them, like have a surveillance camera every time or whatever. Or you send somebody to come around and watch or whatever. Like they're racist or something, you know? I mean, this is my town. You're visitors. You set up shop here, but don't treat me like I'm a problem, and I'm not. And you know, and that's a feeling that I feel like a lot of my race, black people, they feel that way. And that's one reason I just go just because. It's because I can do that. That's the way I feel. Like I can go in this store. I'm like, I don't really care what they say. If they have a problem, too bad. I'm like, put a sign, go somewhere else. Or put a sign up and say, tell me not to come back, and I'm going to ask you why, and then there's going to be a problem. Because I feel like they're here, why can't I be here, you know? But those are not everybody, but those are some shops I walk in. But I mean, and there's like, and everything is so pricey because they have all these antiques here. I mean, Hudson is a middle-class town, a poor middle-class town, city, if you want to call it, city. And they have all these antique people. They have these art galleries and these new food places out. That costs, I call them the million-dollar stores. Nobody in Hudson has $1 million. Seriously, nobody. Unless they're tourists. They come up here to live and whatever, that's what they do. And that's fine and dandy. But, I mean, why are you going to... So, Hudson is catering more towards the tourists than to the people that live here. That's what I feel, and that's what I see. And I think it's not fair at all, because there is a bit of a divide, you know? And it's like everybody, the wealthy are moving up here, and it seems like they're pushing the middle class or the poor people, the original people that are here, we're here, out. You feel me? Like they're like we're lesser class or something. And that's how I feel. But as far but then you have other nice people like Dan John Doe, and that's the only one I really know is John Doe. I worked with him for almost 10 years on and off or whatever. And he's a great, great supporter of mine. And I performed with him and his band, the Bunny Brains, a couple times. And it was really fun and exciting. And it's the feeling of welcome. I felt welcome. I didn't feel like I had to go where everybody was watching me or why do I feel like, oh, she's not supposed to be here. Why is she here? Da-da-da-da-da. If I'm not a tourist, it seems like I shouldn't be in there, but I'm a resident, I could just walk in, but they look at me like, or look at anybody of my color and think, oh, watch out. Their eyes are definitely on you, like hawks. And that's the first time I experienced that, and it kind of made me feel like, oh, wow, this is still going on after all these years. And like then I laughed to myself. I was like, "Wow!" They said we still haven't made it yet, but But that's just life, and we'll make it one day again. I'm so, oh boy. But that's what it is.
It's really interesting. Are you involved in anything in the community?
Well, sometimes. Because I'm the type of person, I volunteer. Like, I used to volunteer for the second show. It's like they have a second show down here. I volunteered there for like about a year or two and helping out and stuff. And then I volunteered, one time I volunteered at the library. I stayed there for like a year or so. And also at the Opera House, I used to volunteer there. I used to pass out flyers or post up posters of the events that they used to have. I mean, I'm in whatever I can get myself. If I feel like I'm bored and I need something to do, feel like I'm wasting my life away, I have to automatically put myself out there and do something. So that's why I was like, oh, what can I do? I could volunteer. So I go here and volunteer, help out there for a while. And I help out there. I don't really like to stay in one place at one time. And when I take a break, I take a break. Meaning I don't volunteer nowhere until I'm ready to volunteer somewhere. But I help out a lot. And helped out at the, they had a women's fair at my building. I live in Bliss Towers, which is a high rise. They call it High Rise in Hudson. And they had a women's health fair down there, and they wanted me to speak. And I spoke and I recited two poems. And it went over very well. And that was like my first type of other than open mic. I really put myself out there. I performed. I spoke on something about women's health and how everybody should get tested. They shouldn't be walking around here not knowing what they have, and they hollering, talking to somebody else, being intimate with somebody else, and they don't know their sexual status. Are they clean or are they not clean? You know, I think it's up to them. There's no excuse of why you don't know your sexual status if you have something or if you don't have something. STD, whatever, you know. I mean, that's for your protection and the person's protection. Because I know if somebody had, I would be really pissed off. I mean, I'm telling you, go check. Go. These days now, you have to probably go with the dude in order for them to get an AIDS test, because some guys are scared. They say they're scared of what the actual outcome might be, you know. And then they say they went to the doctor and they got the test done, and they didn't get the test done and ended up you having something, you know. I mean, either way, girl or boy, you're gonna have to, man or woman, you're gonna have to. You're gonna have to have a backup. You're gonna have to be there. You can't just say. You just can't take, yes, I did take the test. And you had to have the paper and everything. So, I mean, I think you really got to be on your game when it comes to that. There's no freaking excuse at all. I said, we're all at an age. We're all adults, and we can comprehend, and we know what sex is and what sex is and what sex does. And you need to know what your body is. If you don't know what STDs is, you know a major STD is AIDS. And you don't want to get AIDS, so you want to go to the doctor or a clinic or whatever and get tested. And if you don't have it, fine. But if you have something else, you have to get it taken care of, you know? I mean, it just I feel like a lot of people around here, they just walk this place with their head up in the clouds. Sometimes they just all high up on smoke and alcohol and their greediness that they don't look down to see what's in front of them, and then that's when they get smacked and they just have a death sentence living with them. You know, it's just, even though I mean, there's a lot of medicines or whatever, but I don't want to take no medicine. Nobody wants to take no medicine, especially if something that you could have prevented, you know? But that's just the world we live in. It happens here, it happens everywhere. And I believe somebody else probably saying the same thing I'm saying somewhere else, but in a different way. But that's what it is through my eyes that I see.
Can you talk about Bliss Towers?
Oh yeah, I could talk about Bliss Towers. Bliss Towers is not bliss. It's not bliss at all. But the rent is bliss. Like, cause it's a government housing, or whatever, affordable housing, or whatever. So the rent is bliss, but as far as the people there, there are a lot of, it's really a lot of, what we call haters and, mainly haters and people who don't like you and, but there's some that, there's a little bit of haters, a little bit of good people. And there's a little bit of bad people, whatever. It's like all mixed. But what the building is like its own little world. It's like a city within a city. And a lot of minorities live down there. A lot. We all of us live downtown. All of us. I don't know, it seems like that's where all the black people are, all the minorities are. And it's just shipped us at the bottom of the pot. But anyway, I just said that just because that's the way it looks to me. Anyway, the building is, people in the building are, they get this, I feel that they're discriminated by politics, or just politics, or I should say greedy people, because they wanna tear it down, which is, I can understand if they want to tear it down, they have every right to tear it down now, because we had suffered an earthquake a month or a year ago or whatever, and it had a big, and it shook. Me and my friend who was in the house, I live on the 7th floor, and all of a sudden the building started swaying like this, and then we were all running down the hall, and then you could see the walls just going like this. Like, it was like something like in a movie. And I was running down the stairs and everything. Everybody was running. It was like kind of like trampling on each other almost. It was just crazy. And then it got so bad, like we have these pillars that kind of hold up like the entranceway. It's like a big slab of concrete up there just to keep you from the shade or whatever as you're entering the building. The earthquake shook the building so much that the pillar moved, and that the rooftop had nothing holding it up except that one on the side. And I don't know how God it stood up there without that other pillar under it, you feel me? But somehow, I don't know what happened, they moved it, I guess they pushed it over and whatever, and so it's standing up now. Like, but I don't know if there's any glue or cement up there or whatever. And then when I went home, you could see cracks in the wall where you could see like, it was like building was probably, the earthquake, the building was about to collapse, break in half. And then you see the maintenance man. You tell the maintenance man or whatever, like, oh my, I got cracks in my wall, whatever. because of earthquake and whatnot. They're painting the cracks of the wall, so like if they have an inspection, that they won't see it. You know, they're trying to paint up scars that need to be seen. You know, because if another thing happens like that, that building will freaking collapse. It will. But the building, I mean, everybody has like a certain attitude down there. I call it the building. I don't know. We call it the high rise, but we call it the building also. So, but it's like it's not as bad as what people say. It's not bad at all. It's more bad up the street than it is down the street. Like, we have this street called Fifth. That's like the bad street. It's like the ghetto or whatever you want to call it. And they have more police up here than they do down at the building. Oh, let me tell you another thing about the building. When there is a fire or somebody pulls the alarm or whatever happens, it takes those behind the firemen, the fire trucks and them, 20 or 30 minutes to come down to the building and do what they gotta do to fix whatever's going on or turn off the fire alarm. And I feel because the fire alarm often gets pulled because sometimes the elevators don't work and only the doors don't even open. You have emergency exits, but then when you get downstairs, the emergency door is locked. So the only way you could turn it on, open it, unless you pull up the fire alarm, you know, and then you ask the why is the exit locked and whatever. He said it's locked because of such and such. We don't want nobody running in and out and hanging out in the hallways, whatever, which is fine and dandy. Like, if you don't want to do that, put cameras in there. You know, you got cameras. They got cameras in the building. Like, cameras everywhere. It feels like a prison, in a way. Then you have this one security guard who thinks he's the freaking warden, and whatever. He's supposed to secure our house. He's supposed to watch, stay in that room, whatever he does, and do what he watches the monitors and whatever. Not worried about whoever's coming to your house. He's asking you, like, where are you going? Are you supposed to be in here? Are you, who are you going to see? He's like grilling people like they're inmates or something, you know? And then he's walking around, listening to people's conversations at their door and whatnot. And the way he treats it, it's like a prison sometimes. I mean, I don't know. It's just crazy in that building sometimes. And the reason why everybody moves there is because the rent is good. You know, I don't pay like $700, $800 for a one bedroom, which is totally ridiculous, I think, in all reality. And I pay a reasonable amount. And a lot of other people pay a reasonable amount in there because it's a fixed income, whatever. And, but then they say, like, why? Then these people wonder, like, they say they're going to tear the building down. Where are we going to go? Where are we going to go? Then at one time, I remember I did another interview with this girl named Damara, and she was telling me how it was about tearing down the high rise. And she was saying that they were going to put us on farms. I'm like, how are you gonna put us on farms? They was thinking about putting us on farms or whatever. I swear to goodness. And she said, I'm like, how are you gonna put us on farms? I'm like, how are you gonna like ask us to leave where we've been at for all our lives and years, you know, and tell us to ship up and move out somewhere out of town or somewhere else? and stuff. And then I'm like, you can't put, that's a, and when she said the farm thing, I totally got insulted because I felt like they were trying to put us, trying to make us go back to slavery days. Because how are you going to put, majority of the building is, I should say 95% black. And how are you going to put us, all of us, up on some farms? Trying to, what does that look like? You know? I mean, I just, whoever thought of that idea was really dumb and should be smacked in the face back into reality. And I had said, I was like, that's not right. I mean, you can't do that. What if we said, why can't you renovate? You renovate all these other million, thousand-year-old houses up on Warren Street, these Victorian houses. How come you can't remake the building or renovate the building? Which is on this, I mean, you just can't tear the building down and like hundreds of thousands of people be homeless and try and find some place to go just because you, this is like a, maybe like an eyesore to you, to the city or whatever, because you got all types of different good black people, black people. It's all a mixture. We're all down there because there's really nowhere else for us to go. That's because the rent's too high. Bailey, the rent's too high. And we're all living on fixed incomes. And then once you get like a nice apartment, like the Victorian apartments, whatever, that are on sale, I mean, for rent, plus you got to pay the rent, which is probably $1,000 or $800 a month for a one or two bedroom. And then on top of that, you got to pay heat. On top of that, you got to pay electric. Then whatever else you got, TV or cable, whatever, insurance for your phone, I mean your car. Who has that type of money? You know, people are working their butts off just to survive. Living with kids and everything, struggling and everything, and there seems to be no like let up as a housing rent situation. I mean, they're catering. Oh, I say catering to the tourists because the tourists have all the money because they come up here all the time, constantly, every weekend, every day, whatever. They come up here and they have all the money. They could afford these things like $1,000 house or whatever or apartment, you know. And I feel like it's really segregated in this town as far as financially and, yeah, financially it is, I feel. But as far as me, I get along with everybody, but I feel like sometimes how like my friends that I hang out with or whatever, my so-called associates, I feel they view me as like the voice of the ghetto. the voice of the ghetto, or the voice for them, because it seems like, cause since I kind of know people, or whatever, I will talk if I'm given the chance about what's going on, what I feel, or let it be put out there, you know, and so that way, other people will hear it and know, and like, okay, she's talking some sense, like, what are we going to do here? Something has to be done. You know, and I mean, it may happen or it may not happen, but at least I didn't try, you know. So, but I don't know, it's just crazy. It's fun though. When I say experience is fun, good or bad, it's fun. Because everybody has a human side in the end, they're human in the end. And then you look at them differently, and it's just crazy. It's like a beautiful and a bad thing at the same time. You feel me? But all I can do is pray and smile and hope and do what I can to do whatever I have to do. You know, I never really thought of myself as to be like a, what they call me is an advocate or something. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like everything should be fair, equal opportunity employer all the time. You give me 50, I give you 50. We hand. We we share. Not I give you a piece of, I give you $1 and I keep all the millions to myself. You know, I give you maybe $1,000. I would extend my hand to help. You feel me? But I don't have that. I don't have those type of finances. So the only thing I can do is talk. And I write. And when I write, that's what I see, and that's where people probably understand me more as far as what's going on in my world that I see through my eyes. You know, and it makes it a lot easier. That's all I have to say about that.
How do you see Hudson continuing to change?
How can I see Hudson continue to change? Could you repeat the question?
Maybe I'll ask a different question.
Okay.
What kind of change would you like to see in Hudson?
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's better. Okay, what type of change I would like to see in Hudson? I would like to see basically more togetherness than like what it used to have back in the day. And it's like more so much separation. Nobody knows one another anymore. You don't know your neighbor, or you don't know anything. It's just like everybody just out for themselves. And I really believe that more should be done. There should be places for people to go. Every place that opens is an antique shop, an art gallery, $1 million store. I feel that they should cater to people that are reasonable income, you know? Not like you walk in the store and you're thinking about, oh, I'm gonna buy something. This new store, you go in there and they got this little nice dress up there for like $215. I'm like, this is not for me. It's not my taste. I can't buy this. And I have to go out of town or out there where they have all the other plazas, all the other clothing stores, whatever. Out there, that's not Hudson. That's Greenport. This is Hudson. You know, even though they classify them together, but this is Hudson. I don't feel like walking all the way out to Greenport. Or a lot of people don't feel like spending all their money going out to Greenport and going out there and buying whatever they want to buy, like their clothes. They should have clothing stores in town, like Walmart prices. You feel me? Or they should have like a. They used to have JJ Newberry's here. It used to be like a little clothing outlet, and they had a little like a diner. And you were just going there. People were just going there, buy their everyday goods and stuff. And plus, I felt like that brought more money into Hudson. Because if you go out there, that's Greenport. We're sending money out there to Greenport. You know, I mean, all their money is we're helping Greenport out. Nobody's helping Hudson out. You feel me? I mean, except the tourists, because they have all the money. I feel like there's no togetherness here. It's all scattered. Scattered like salt. Only certain places have taste. You feel me? It's kind of lonely. If you've been here all your life, and all of a sudden you're being shunned away or looked at like you don't belong here, no matter what color you are. Basically, it does a lot go by color, but it doesn't matter what color you are or who or what age you are or whatever. It's just that if you're originally from here, it seems like you're overlooked. Nobody cares about what you have to say. They always go to the next person. or whatever. Like they have these shanty towns down here in Hudson. They call it, it's like a boat lodge, I guess. It's been here since the 1800s, I guess. So I think it's historic, supposed to be. So, but they're going to tear those down. And people have been living in there, hanging out there for years. There was a boat club down there. And they went there this morning. I was on the news. They went there this morning with guns, SWAT team and everything. Guns drawn on three older men. Telling them to get out of the house because you got to evacuate because this is not their property anymore. It got bought or sold or bought or whatever. And now they're going to tear those buildings down and build something else. And which is, I think it's just crappy, you know, how they just go about things. And that's that politics and that money nonsense and whatever. You're going to tear something down that's been there for years and years and years, and that's somebody's home, you know, and then they're just kicking them out. I'm like, what is that's like? That's like, okay, like the so-called idea of Columbus discovering America and kicking the Indians out and just putting them on hotels called reservations, and then coming then finding their maids and their butlers over in Africa, bringing us over here, and they're cooking them food, tending to their children. That's what it is. That's the way I see it. And then, what are they doing? Laughing, living in luxury, playing cards, or whatever they did back then. That's the way I see it now. I mean, you can see it, right? I mean, it's just totally stupid. And whatever. So I'm like, that's the way I feel, that's the way I view it as. Like, you're kicking them off their place, they've been there for years, and then you're going to tear it down and make it your own just because of money. You know, money has something to do with it. I don't really know the full situation, but that's what it is. Just totally, like, nobody cares. Everybody's greedy. They want to just get everybody out and make it their own. You feel me? And it's just not right. It's just a waste of, I just look at them in pity of people who do that and whatever, and it's not fair and stuff. And this immigration thing that they got going on here, like as far as not only Hudson, around the U.S., that how there shouldn't be no illegal immigrants in the country, you know. But I'm thinking about back in history, we're all illegal immigrants. I mean, our ancestors, we were brought over here, and some people just came over here, and then we settled here. So we're here. So those other people that say that we shouldn't let immigrants come in or whatever, that's wrong. Because America was inviting people, before it was America, was having immigrants come all the time to make it what this place is. And then I get on this holiday nonsense. I'm going older now, since I've, like the holidays that they have, like the 4th of July, Thanksgiving types of things. Like, the 4th of July is for independence of the country, whatever, right? But I'm thinking in my mind, that wasn't for us, the Indians and the black people. You feel me? That was basically for the white people. They stole a country, and they signed some papers, a whole bunch of men, 1776, came up with some idea, made the Constitution, and that's how we got our independence so often. But that was basically for the white people. But that's the truth. And we were still slaves, and they were still living on reservations, and maybe being slaves also. I don't know. But I mean, really, this country is basically, it's trying to kick everybody that's of color out, I feel. Those Mexicans, they're of color. They have the right to come here just as we had the right to come here many years ago. And they shouldn't have some authority telling that they gotta leave. And they're trying to make a way for them to better themselves, you know, from a country that doesn't care about them. Haitians, anybody who comes over here from a war-torn country, we're not going to accept them. They have to go through all these loopholes just to try to be a productive person in this country. They're trying to get away from hell. This is a golden land to them. And we shouldn't just kick them out and send them back where they came from. You know, they should tell us. That's that saying, is like, we should go back where you came from. I'm like, I never been over nowhere. I belong here. And I want to stay here. I don't want to go over there, over that war-torn country or ever, you know? And I want to place my roots here and be an abiding citizen. And I'll work, feed my kids, and live like everybody else does. That's what everybody wants to do. Live, work, love, tend to their children, and have fun. And that's it. I mean, nobody wants to wake up and war in a war-torn country and just hearing bombs everywhere, just people just dying and everything. And it's crazy. You sound like you got to go back over there. You're sending them to a death. You're giving them a death sentence. Because a lot of those places don't know if they're gonna live or die the next day. You know, whether they're gonna be raped or whatever. I mean, it's just totally chaos, and I think it's effed up. And it's kind of like that way in Hudson, and on a smaller scale, but it's just crazy. But I would really like to see a lot more closeness instead of everybody being spread apart. It's like, I love you this big, right? And then just come give me a hug. But you still got your arms open like, I love you this big, but you're not willing to embrace me, you know? You're not ready to like hold me like you help me out. You're just willing to just like, I'm here. Okay, what do I do now? I'm here, I'm hugging you, where's the embrace? Because if once I let go, you don't have me anymore, you feel me? So that would just act like, okay, I'm here, I hug you, and you're out there again doing whatever, you know? Like I had to hold on to you, I just let you go. It was like a false act, you feel me? You're training some that you're not being. But that's it for that. That's all I have to say about that.
Curious.
Okay, I'm here.
A few more things.
Okay.
Is that all right?
No problem.
What kind of ways you can see changes happening?
Oh, when I can see changes happening. Let me see. Well, I noticed that I don't really know. That if I notice any changes happening. I really haven't, to tell you the truth, I really haven't paid attention. I mean, I have paid it, but I really haven't noticed any changes. No, which is kind of sad to say. But as far as well, I should say they have this. They have like a community garden down in Hudson, on a lower, like by the high rise, and where people could grow their own like vegetables and stuff or whatever. I have a garden down there also, and I and it gives you something to do because there's no backyard. There's no backyard in that building, so you have if you want to grow some vegetables, you have to go over there or whatever, and I have some cabbages and some beans and a lot of tomatoes and stuff. And I see like it's like it's a community garden. There's other people that live on it's a second ward. So everybody lives on the second ward has a plot in the garden or whatever, if they choose to sign up or not. But you get to talk to people. I mean, it's more like engaging, like you get to meet other people and learn about the plants and herbs and it's just like a togetherness, kind of like a community type of thing, which is it's crazy. It's more togetherness in that little freaking garden that I could say there is almost anywhere in Hudson, to me, which is sad, but that's the way I see it. That's the way I see it in my eyes. But there's all different types of races. You have blacks, whites, Asians, Arabs, a whole bunch of different types of people up in there, just tending their garden, laughing, weed picking and stuff. And also I noticed that they're having more like community things also down at the waterfront here. They have more like things going on like where like free music. There's something to do. Like you don't have to just wake up and walk the streets all day long doing nothing. There's some place you could go and sit and relax and just chill, you know. Because if you're just wandering and wandering and wandering and wandering, your mind is going to be like, okay, I need to do something. I need somewhere to sit and chill or whatever. Or it's going to go to something bad. You're going to start doing bad things or whatever. So they have this, down at the waterfront, they have like a big gazebo and whatever. And they have like little events like music or comedy or anything that happens down there, there's always something going on. You know, you just take a walk. Let's go to the park or whatever. Let's stroll here and see what's going on. It's something to take your mind off of what's really going on in your life. You know, just take that break, you know. It's nice to have, like, a way to just get away, even in your own little town, you know. So they made that waterfront place. It's like a getaway place, you know. Totally different from the high rise and uptown. It's just quiet. It's like you're not in Hudson. It's just quiet and peaceful and everything. And it seems like the people that you think that wouldn't go down there, they do go down there. So that means like okay, they're enjoying. They're using this as something that they bring their kids down. They ride their bikes. They play. You know. It's like I don't know, it's really nice. But as far as other things, I really haven't noticed any other thing. I'm trying to think, and I'm really not coming up with a lot, except just the two things I mentioned. But maybe I need to look more, because I know there's been a lot of change, but I just really haven't noticed it for myself, you know.
Are you involved in the local politics at all?
I'm not involved in local politics. I don't like politics, but I will give my point of view if asked or whatever. So, but I'm not involved because I believe that's just a bunch of bullcrap sometimes because it doesn't even make any sense. I mean, whatever needs to be done, should be done. That's it. End of story. And there shouldn't be like no fighting or arguing or whatever, or how much money, whatever, whatever. I mean, it's just dumb. I mean, like I said before, we're here to help. We're supposed to help. And it shouldn't, no money or nothing should get in the way with it. But I understand money is an aspect, but you have to be human. You have to come down to freaking earth. I'm like, we're not kings and billionaires or whatever. We have to come down to earth and look at what's going on in front of us. That's what we need to do. But they're talking about politics is all about lies and cheating and a whole bunch of freaking nonsense. And I'm thinking, like, why are they talking about this? I mean, all that is irrelevant, you know? But that's what it is. I'm not involved in, you know, I don't think they would like what I would have to say. I don't know. I don't think they would like it.
What do you imagine the future looks like for you?
Oh, no, I don't like these questions. I mean, I don't like that question. Because everybody, my mom asked me that question, and I was like, I don't know. And I remember when I was in school, they always tell you to have these five-year plans, like what you're going to do in the near future. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know what if I'm going to live tomorrow. I don't know. And I always viewed it like that because I always lived for the moment. I was like, I'm here today. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I could plan my future right now. In 2 days, I could be something happened to me and my future is done. It's done. You feel me? But in my mind, when I see myself in the future, I see myself, hopefully living. And, basically I feel like I'll still be basically kind of like doing the same thing I'm doing now as far as my poetry. It's mainly pursuing my poetry a lot. That's my driven goal. That's my drive. That's my dream. So I know I'll be doing something with the poetry thing and whatnot. And I see myself traveling because I'm at this age at this time where I want to go anywhere and everywhere, you know, like except overseas because I'm scared to fly. And I was like, I can't take no train overseas. I can't take no train over there. I was like, I'll stay within the United States. But I see myself maybe. I see myself in a lot of places as far as my art. I see myself maybe performing in the city, like on a regular basis. You know, I see myself, I want to dream is to go to Apollo one day, just to see, to the experience, you know, just to experience that feeling. And we would never know, you know, we never know. If something happens, I'll be like, yeah, that's my future. I'm going somewhere. You know, I may mainly spend a lot of time with my family, too. That's what I see, because my brother, he just had a baby, so I'm an aunt. I'm an aunt. My mom's her first grandchild and stuff, so I know I'm going to be spending a lot of time with them. And I don't want no kids, though, but I'll just babysit. I like my freedom. So whenever they cry, you always call mom and dad. Like, bruh, your baby's crying. I don't know what's wrong with her. You can take her back now. I finished playing with her. You can take her back. But I don't know. But as far as what I said, that's where I see myself. But I never really thought ahead that far. Because I always thought of right now. Because in my faith, in my belief, you never know when you're going to go. Or whatever. And but you can make plans and it can fall short. There's this one joke I heard. It said, what can tell God a joke? If you want to tell God a joke, what will make him laugh? And he said, and the joke was, said about somebody you made plans, you know? But if you make plans, but he is the planner, you know? I mean, I'm going on another level of religiousness, sorry. But he plans everything. So he said, no, the way you can make God laugh is, tell him your plans. And if I tell him my plans, and they're not in the stars for me, in store for me, it's dead and over. That's not my plan. It's maybe something else. So it may lead me something. My time may lead me somewhere else that I may be involved in, or whatever. I don't know. But I know it'll be with my poetry. I'm doing a lot with my poetry and my talent and stuff. So, that's it for that.
Is there anything else you would like to put on the record?
No. Not at the moment. Oh yeah. Can I read one more poem?
Yes, I would love that.
Okay. I have the perfect poem for this. I'm sorry. I have written it down.
Take your time.
Oh, here it is. I found it. It's called I See You Looking. I see you looking at me with quiet eyes. Some certain secret you chose to hide. Holding my emotions by your side, married to my feelings, challenged the storm we both shared. Moving to try to love our demons. Perpetrators are neglected by their semen. Chosen natural born fiends, seeming to remain supreme as long as they experience that second dream that is not wet. Dried out when you left the bet. About focus, attack coming along, natural disasters eating us up like locusts, plagues raining for many days ahead, giving us food and still poisoning our bread. Then I see you looking at me with those quiet eyes, some certain secret you chose to hide. You're welcome. That's basically what we basically talked about all in a nutshell, this poem. So I see you looking, because people watch you all the time, but you see them, they may look at you like in the corner of your eye, from the corner, or they just like glance or whatever. They just look at you passing by, but you notice it. And you notice that the way they look at you, they sense something. It's a feeling that they chose to hide, something that they're not happy about, or whatever. But you married yourself to my feelings, so you're feeling me. And we go through challenges, and we share the same problems. We all go through problems. And we're all moving to try to love our demons. We try to love our temptations. That basically, there's nothing to do. We're going to run to our temptations. That's our demons. And then people are neglected by people, families, dads, or whatever. They're neglected. And then you got these chosen natural born fiends seeming to remain supreme. They think that they're these kings and queens or whatever. And they think that they're high above status. And as long as they experience a second dream, that second dream is like drugs, you know. When I said experience that second dream that is not wet, you know, like we're both women, we adult, but, you know, I'm sorry. But, but the drugs, I mean, drugs, that's dry and stuff. So, I mean, they're just using them drugs just to mess up their bodies or whatever. And then, also, we got to talk about the world. We got to become focused because everything is messing up. I believe we're messing up so bad that the weather is messing us up. You feel me? So it's like natural disasters eating us up like locusts. There's mad natural disasters now. People are dropping like flies just because that's what's happening. And then you got plagues like AIDS, raining moon for many days ahead. And you know, and you got all these things that are in our food now because people are putting antibiotics trying to in our food or whatever, pink slime, all that nonsense. You're giving us food and you're still poisoning our bread. So you're giving us food and you're still poisoning, you're still putting stuff that's not supposed to be in it. And then you're giving it to us. And then I see you looking at me with those quiet eyes because you know you're doing something wrong that you're not supposed to be doing. So in a way you feel guilty inside and like, damn. And then you bow your head and it's like, I see you looking at me with those quiet eyes, hiding some certain secret you chose to hide. So you're feeling me, but you're still doing what you're doing. And that's not a pretty thing. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thank you. I hope I did okay.
Great, amazing. Is there anybody that you would suggest that the oral history summer school should speak with?
Huh?
Is there anybody else that you think should be added to the archive?
I think Lady Moon, you know her? Lady Moon? Her name is, Gunga. She's a Bedelia girl. I forgot her name. I know they call her Lady Moon. Her last name is Bedelia. And I would think Dan, he would be good. Yeah. But they'll give you a lot of insight, I believe, on the town and whatever, on their perspective. And that's all I could think of right now. But that's about it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself again?
Yes. Hello, my name is Ifeatayo Cobbins. I'm a poet here in Hudson, New York. Thank you for having me, and I hope you have a good day. Peace.
Thank you very much.